I want to tell you a story about Paul Rica and his driver. Maybe I've told it before in other contexts. Maybe I mentioned it. But you know what? I like it so much, I'm going to tell you again. Because it applies to today. To Governor Pritzker and the politics and debt and the federal bailout that Democrats want to send our way from Washington. Thanks, Nancy Pelosi. Anyway, Paul Rica was the boss of bosses. He was the boss of all organized crime in the world, and you know this because nobody's ever made a movie about him. He's the guy behind the record companies and behind Hollywood and behind just so much. And he's behind the outfit and built it nationally. But this story I tell you about starts on Cermak Road. Paul Rica is going west on Cermak Road. He's driving. Well, he's not driving. He's sitting in the back of his big black Lincoln, or was it a Cadillac? And a young guy is driving. And Rica engages the young guy in conversation and says, so what's new? And the young guy starts telling him a story about another young, tough guy that he hates. And the driver hates this other fellow so much, he wants him to be dead. He's not asking Paul Rica to have it authorized. But I hate this guy so much, he says, I wish he had cancer. I hate him. I want him to have cancer and die. And Paul Rica sits in the back of the big black car going west on Cermak Road. And he says, I can't believe you said such a thing. That's a terrible thing to say. You want the guy to have cancer? You hate him so much? Don't wish him to have cancer. Wish that he becomes a gambler. Because if he's a gambler, it'll take longer. And it'll hurt more. The reason I bring that story up is because the other day, Ambassador Nikki Haley, the centrist Republican and future presidential candidate, called out Illinois and the other Democratic states for wanting a federal bailout. They're using coronavirus as pretext for a federal bailout to bail them out of all their pension debts and all the bad decisions they've made, spending and spending and taxing and spending into oblivion. She tweeted, such states that had recklessly spent and taxed their way into oblivion should not expect a federal bailout. And Pritzker was asked about this the other day at his, you know, at his briefing where he selects the questions, his coronavirus briefing where he puts on a mask and then takes it off in the corridor and walks up to the podium and takes questions. Then when he leaves, he doesn't put the mask back on because the mask is a show. And he was asked about Nikki Haley and the bailout, the federal bailout that Nancy Pelosi wants to, and the congressional Democrats want to give. And he said, I want to know if members of the Republican Party in Illinois agree with her that Illinois doesn't deserve any federal help. That's what I want to know, Pritzker said. Now, that's a cheap trick of an answer, and it's easy when reporters aren't holding your feet to the fire. But here's what I want to know, Governor Commodius Maximus. If you have a friend, an in-law, somebody you know that you care about, or at least you care about their families, and they gamble, and I don't mean dropping $100 on a Super Bowl square once a year, but I'm talking about someone completely out of control, missing rent and mortgage payments, pawning the wedding ring, pawning the wife's jewelry, raiding the kids' college fund, desperate, and coming to you for a handout again and again. What do you do? Do you give them money, Governor? Go ahead. Give them money from your own personal billions and billions that you keep offshore, away from the tax man. But why should taxpayers have to bleed? You don't have the political will to do what must be done. You want to raise taxes with businesses getting slaughtered by coronavirus shutdown, but you don't lay off any of those political or state jobs. Neither does Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Neither does Miss Sensible Shoes herself, Cook County Democratic boss Tony Preckwinkel. You're not laying people off like everybody in the private sector. And you don't want to put push for a fix in public worker union pension funds going forward. And it's that relationship that drives the political system into the ground. So it's everybody's fault. Right? Governor Maximus, Commodius, you want to point your pudgy finger. And you're relieved that so many in the media are in your political tribe and that you've got it, you've got your media covered. But here's the thing. Yeah, we're all tribal. But there's one thing political tribalism can't fix. That red ink in the budgets. The numbers are the numbers. The state is basically insolvent now. The city, too. And people who can leave will leave. And what are you left with? Those of us who remain, are we just supposed to cannibalize ourselves? There is a way. And it's used for gamblers and addicts and other compulsives who don't want have the will to do what must be done. Jeff Carlin is with me from WGN's Rokan Show, the executive producer and my friend. And also joining us is Ted Dabrowski, the brilliant financial analyst who's with wirepoints.org. And I've quoted him in a column. This is the podcast of that column interview. And you know where you are? Between Governor Commodius Maximus pointing fingers and pudgy fingers and a federal bailout, which would only keep things going as they have been and not address the root cause of the problem. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
It's great to have a guest, even though I love the Jeff Carlin and the Wayback Machine. It's great to have a guest, and there's no better guest to have right now with Illinois finances in the tank, getting worse, drowning in sorrow and self-pity, and Mitch McConnell rejecting a blank check for state and local governments from the Senate. None other than Ted Dabrowski of Wire Points is our guest today on the Chicago Way. Good day, Mr. Dabrowski. How are you?
Good day to you guys. Good to be with you and Jeff.
So let's get right to it. Mitch McConnell, the Senate majority leader, Republican of Kentucky, was on an interview with Hugh Hewitt recently and was asked about the Illinois and other states hoping for a bailout. He suggested, quote, "You know, we'll certainly insist that anything we borrow to send to the states is not spent on solving problems they've created for themselves over the years with their pension programs." It sounded like he was talking specifically about Illinois, Ted.
Well, he was, and there was a good reason for that. It's been about a week ago when the Illinois Senate head, Don Harmon, sent a letter to the Illinois congressional delegation asking for a $42 billion bailout and wanting to propose that as a way to solve some of Illinois' problems. And within that request that Don Harmon made to the Illinois congressional delegation was $10 billion for the state pensions. And if you read it right, it's another $9.6 billion for the local pension problems we have in Illinois. And you know, I think a lot of people understand some states and local governments asking for help because of the shutdown, but nobody, and McConnell is one of them, doesn't want to see people using the crisis right now to ask for bailouts of pre-pandemic problems. And that's exactly what Illinois is trying to do, is just trying to get money for the problems they've made over the past three decades.
The Tribune editorial board, and I'm a member, so full disclosure, editorialized after Harmon's ask of the Democratic members of Congress that it was shameless for Harmon to make such a request. Is that a fair characterization?
Oh, it's absolutely. You know, when you look at, and you know, we've talked about this for, and many of us have talked about the problems in Illinois for decades, the continual lack of desire to fix the problems, running more deficits, running unpaid bills, the you know, when you add up, based on Moody's calculations, all the pension liabilities and retiree health liabilities we have in Illinois, it's $430 billion. That's just, if you divide it by number of households, it's $90,000 a household. It's they're absurd amounts now. And they never wanted to fix them. And so for Senator Don Harmon and his 40-member caucus to pen a letter to ask that of other states, and you know, a lot of other states have made the tough decisions on their finances or reforming pensions. They've made tough choices. And so how could Don Harmon go to the rest of the country, the rest of the taxpayers, and say, please bail us out? We don't want, you know, we're not going to fix our problems, but we'd like for you to bail it out since now we're in trouble.
Well, I don't know who's still here in Illinois. I know I am, but others have left, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. I don't know how many taxpayers have left.
Well, no, I can tell you that since the year 2000, when you add up, so the IRS tracks all this data. Who's moving where, right? Because they know where people are filing their taxes. So they know who was in one state one year and then filing in a different state the next. And so when you add up all the people that came into Illinois and that left Illinois, you know, they see the taxpayer and the number of dependents on each return. It's 1.5 million net people, net, have left Illinois for other states. I mean, imagine how big we'd be if we had 1.5 million people more. It'd be awesome.
And they take their taxes with them, right?
Exactly. They take their, you know, they take their taxes. They take their, you know, their philanthropy. They take their job creation. They take many things. Obviously, it depends on who they are. But they take their money with them primarily. They take their wealth with them.
And that brings us to the events of a couple days ago, where Mitch McConnell was asked by Hugh Hewitt about bankruptcy for Illinois and for the other states, I would assume, Connecticut and New York. And McConnell said that he might be in favor of it.
There is no bankruptcy code chapter. Do you think that we need to invent one for states so that they can discharge some of these liabilities that were put in place by previous governors? Like, I mean, Jerry Brown ran a giveaway program for public employee unions that was just astonishing. And as did Gray Davis, as did, you know, it's just a lot of Democratic governors. Illinois is probably the worst in Connecticut. They've just given money away for years to people who aren't working.
Yeah, I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route. It saved some cities, and there's no good reason for it not to be available. My guess is their first choice would be for the federal government to borrow money from future generations to send it down to them now so they don't have to do that. That's not something I'm going to be in favor of.
What did you make of that?
Well, so you know, this request did not go unnoticed nationally, and of course, we wrote an op-ed at WirePoints. We wrote an op-ed about it's been a few weeks now, warning about the bailout requests coming from the states like Illinois, New Jersey, Connecticut. You know, they're all in deep trouble, and they all refuse to fix the problem. So, you know, the pandemic has created a real mess for them, because if it was bad before the crisis, now it's really bad. And so, of course, those things got to people like Mitch McConnell. And McConnell is saying, look, we don't want to bail out states for their problems. That's, you know, and he recognizes this wrong. And, you know, he's even from Kentucky, by the way, which has arguably in the, you know, the top five worst pension crises in the country. So he says, look, I would much rather allow states to go bankrupt, you know, to file for bankruptcy and allow some kind of bankruptcy law, than to use taxpayer dollars to bail out bad decisions by bad states.
What would that entail? First of all, can it be done? Second of all, what would it entail? What would happen?
Well, Well, let's talk about bankruptcy for a minute.
Right.
You know, today, so there's local bankruptcy, which would be for a municipality, and it's legal for cities to go bankrupt. All a state has to do is authorize bankruptcy in their state for municipalities, and then those municipalities can use the federal bankruptcy laws to do so. And that's exactly what Detroit did, Stockton, California. You've got many, you know, not many, you've got quite a few cities that have filed for bankruptcy. There's 26 states that allow municipal bankruptcy in the country. Illinois is not one of them. So that means places like Harvey, places like East St. Louis, places like Chicago, I would argue, can't use bankruptcy to kind of get a new start on life, a new lease on life. They can't. So they just have to keep muddling along and suffering and all the pain that comes with that. So the first thing about bankruptcy is that right now the legislature could, our legislature could, with a simple majority, authorize municipal bankruptcy, and that would help solve a lot of problems in places that are in deep need of that. At the state level, it's a little different because there is no state bankruptcy law. What we have as a proxy is what's happened in Puerto Rico and PROMESA, which allowed effectively Puerto Rico to go bankrupt. And so what could be done is to use that and to create some kind of new laws to allow eventually states to go bankrupt. And given where we are now and given the crisis in Illinois, Politico even wrote today that Illinois might be a perfect candidate for bankruptcy. So it's certainly one of the options given how bad things have become here.
Well, I remember, I'm reminded by a good friend of mine that years ago at the City Club, I brought up the idea of Chicago going bankrupt as a way to save itself, save the city. And immediately I was trashed as a person with evil intent. But if Chicago could go bankrupt, for example, what would be the practical benefits of such a thing?
Well, so here's what happens right now. So to your point, I think you were right and you were being prescient about what should be done for Chicago. Every year that this goes on, the crisis gets worse. And if you care about, it depends what side you're on, but if you care about, the people that are struggling in the South Side or the West Side, well, you need a Chicago that's vibrant and healthy. Or if you care about the policemen and firemen that protect the city, well, their pensions are less than 20% funded. So they're going to go broke. So if you care about them, you need some form of bankruptcy. You need something to kind of reset the bar again. So what bankruptcy would allow you to do is to take all those debts and, okay, without bankruptcy, what happens? People continue to leave. The debts get bigger, the taxes get higher, and the spiral continues, right? You're just stuck in a spiral and everything gets worse. And we've seen that even in the last decade where we had, arguably the best economic growth ever. We saw Chicago's pensions get dramatically worse. We saw the state's pensions get dramatically worse. So now that we're in the down cycle, it's going to collapse even faster and further.
And because revenue's not coming in, right?
Right, coming in. The pension assets, whatever stocks they held and investments they held are going to be worth less. Interest rates are like near zero, so you can't even put it into the bank and earn some money because they don't pay you anything. So this is how things are going to get bad. So without bankruptcy, it just continues the trend, and the people I think that most people are going to suffer even more. With bankruptcy, you get a federal judge who comes in, who looks at all the debts, says, wait a minute, you can't have, and you and I have talked about this before, you can't have this level of debts in Chicago and function as a city going forward. It just won't work. So they calculate what would be the fair amount of debts, and they would look and see what contracts have to be broken and changed, how the retirement system might be different going forward. And it comes up with something fair for everybody from the low-income workers in the South Side to the pensioners, to the bondholders, to the vendors who provide contracts, to the Chicago Teachers Union contracts. All those things would have to get renegotiated, reestablished. And what you do is you create an Illinois, a Chicago that becomes functional and able to move forward again. And I think that Detroit was a good example of that, where it moves forward again with a positive feel rather than always a doomsday scenario hanging over its head.
And who were those screaming the loudest that they were hurt by the bankruptcy? That bankruptcy was in Detroit was contrived to protect the bondholders and not the little people. There were interests at stake here, right? And some oxes will be gored, correct?
Yeah, and the thing is that there's, you know, the reality is there's no way of getting away from some of the pain. You know, it's more like, so we have these massive debts in Chicago, overwhelming, and you know, I've argued that Chicago is effectively bankrupt. It's just not formal. We know it's junk rated already. We know that CPS is four notches into junk rating already. So the path for Chicago is a bad one without change. And, you know, Mayor Lori Lightfoot has shown no desire whatsoever to talk about a pension reform. She doesn't want to be on the bully pulpit to demand an amendment to the pension protection clause, nor has Governor Pritzker. So they're not doing anything. And you know, you and I talked about this before. She gave out the biggest contract ever to the CTU right before this pandemic came on. Of course, nobody knew it was coming, but you know, she had no business granting the biggest ever contract to the CTU, but she did. And so they've only made things worse. And so a bankruptcy would allow a federal judge, hopefully somebody who's fair, to kind of look at this whole thing and say, let's create a new construct where Chicago will start to grow again and will not always just be challenged. And of course, you know, cost of living adjustments to pensions would take a hit for sure. Bondholders would take a hit. Vendors might take a hit. The Chicago teacher's contract might take a hit. There might be some salary reductions. We don't know, because that's what it takes, a judge who comes in and slices and dices the numbers. But that's the way to get back to a Chicago that's growing and healthy again, because if we keep letting it go like it is, in 10 years ago, it might be an ugly version of itself.
You are describing, maybe I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, but you seem to be describing a state, a political state, Chicago, Illinois, that does not have the will or political will to save itself.
I think that's well said, and I'll tell you, it doesn't have the political will, and you know, well, I want to talk a little bit about what that means, because you know, this could be, in theory, this could be Pritzker's moment. In theory, this could be Lightfoot's moment. But let me come back to that. The problem we have today is that the political class, they're so ingrained in what they've been doing for so long. You've got the strong link between the unions and the political elite, and they take care of each other. And what they've done is they've created, you know, if you look at all these contracts, and this is what's breaking us. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be factual. But you've got one class of workers in this state who have guaranteed contracts, long-term contracts with guaranteed pay and guaranteed pensions. And they're a pretty big class. And then you've got a second class made up of the private sector who don't have any of those protections. In fact, they've all lost, you know, many of them have lost their jobs, right? We're going to get close to 1 million job losses soon. They've lost their jobs or losing their pay. And yet they're still required right now to continue to pay for that first class. And so as long as that system exists, we'll never get out of it. And I think the lack of political will is there because that system is so ingrained that nobody knows how to break it. And Governor Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot don't have the will to break it.
Well, it seems like Bruce Rauner understood it, and he was driven out of office because he understood it, at least part of it.
Well, he understood it, but you know, he had no idea how to communicate it and to use the bully pulpit to gain people to his thinking. You know, he was right in many respects about the finances, right? I mean, if you look now, you know, right now there's a reason why Illinois is asking for a bailout. And most other states aren't, you know, and every state, don't get me wrong, every state is struggling right now because of the COVID-19, but there's one state in particular that's already put out a letter saying we need a bailout. There's a reason for that. And, you know, Rauner should get credit for seeing that. Unfortunately, we can't give him credit for how he managed, because his management was, I guess, was a failure, but at least he smelled the problem. He knew that it couldn't persist.
So then before we get into the fact that this could be their great moment, Lightfoot and Pritzker, I'd like you to discuss what the attitude would be of all the expatriates, the people who've left in the great Illinois exodus that I've been writing about for 10, 15 years now. Pardon me with that. I don't know how to turn that part off. What would their attitude be if you're in Tennessee, if you're in some states that are managing pensions correctly, like say Wisconsin or Indiana, and you're told by your congressman, you know what, we're going to raise your taxes to help Illinois bail out. How's that going to fly?
It's not funny, but it's funny that you say that. I just saw a post on Facebook. Wait a minute. I just moved out of Illinois to get away from the highest taxes, to run away from these property taxes that I pay there, and to get away from the mess. And now you're coming after me again. So yeah, it's not going to play well. I mean, you know, when we talk about this net 1.5 million people who've left, you know, they left for a reason. And this is to be fair, this is a great part of our country, is that if you don't like the way one state is operating, you go to one where you like what it's doing, right? Whether it's the ethics of the state, or the culture of the state, or the finances of the state, or the school system, you know, pick whatever you want. It's 50 different laboratories. But you know, what would be a real hell is that you finally escape from one that you don't want to be in because you don't value what they do, or you don't like how they run, or in the case of Illinois, it's a very corrupt state. You finally get away from it, only to find out that your federal government is going to force you now in another state to bail out the problems in Illinois. I think that would be so destructive to the way our country operates. And it would be, you know, this is why these bailouts are so bad. They would reward bad behavior from all of these officials we had, the bipartisan bad behavior we've had in Illinois. It would reward them and punish those who actually did the right things, whether it's Tennessee or whatever other state you want to pick that's well run.
It's kind of like making college tuition free from now on. And there could be a guy who drove a beater car for years, and he had holes in his shoes at one point, and rust in his car, and didn't take vacations, and paid for it himself or with his son's help. I'm talking about myself. So when I see free college tuitions being discussed, I'm thinking, what kind of a sucker was I to deny myself all this stuff, like vacations, et cetera? It's like that, isn't it?
Oh, it's precisely like that. It's it's a slap in the face for those people who are, you know, either hardworking or diligent or save. They're conservative, right? I mean, it's right now, you know, we talk about Illinois in that same way. You've got some states that had rainy day funds of a month, 2 months, 3 months, right? They were saving, they were preparing, they managed their finances well. You know, Illinois had whatever 15 minutes or 1 hour of rainy day funds. And that's not even a real number, right? Because when you take all the debts we have in Illinois, we had like negative rainy day funds. So, you know, why punish those states who do the right things to bail out an Illinois or New Jersey or Connecticut who just refuse to do the right things?
Why does a dog, for the purposes of a podcast, why does a dog like to scratch his ear with his foot? Because he can, right? And because they can, because they want to get a bailout and they think they have the votes and spread out the pain. But I don't see this politically working. And it seems that what McConnell has done by bringing up the specter of Illinois bankruptcy is just to basically throw the bailout question back into the laps of the Illinois Democrats, correct?
Well, that's one. There's two games going on. You know, Don Harmon got criticized in some of the papers, the Sun Times, for, you know, why the heck would you do this? But I think the real complaint that he did that is, why the heck did he put it on paper? Come on, right? It's yeah. So that was the real complaint. I think the other side is that, well, you know, bankruptcy is a real option. So it's, you know, I think it's a play by McConnell, although people can think it's just a negotiating thing. But you know, Harmon's laid it out there. He's thrown it up in the air. Now it's a trial balloon, and it'll percolate for a while, and we'll see what happens. You know, maybe they're hoping that there's big changes in D.C. in November, and that they'll find a more friendly crowd to help them. Right? This is a bailout request. Isn't a short term thing. It can be a long term thing. But I think the bankruptcy option is a real option. It's something that, you know, Chicago really needs to consider. Illinois, and we have to look at the numbers. We have to see how long this crisis lasts, which, by the way, is a whole other topic, because, you know, Mary Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker continue to want to extend the shutdown longer and longer, which, of course, makes the hole deeper and deeper. But we have to wait and see. But bankruptcy, I think, for McConnell is a real potential for Illinois.
The but they shut down. They continue the shutdown, and there's some you know evidence that a shutdown of some sort is valid at least. But I don't know if it's you know all the way till the end of June or July if it's valid. If we do so, we cement ourselves into a national depression, and other people die from alcoholism, heart attacks, stress, and so forth. And then you have the issue of, I have not seen or heard anything from Pritzker or Mayor Lightfoot to suggest that they're not going to push for the income tax increase. Have they said they're going to put that in abeyance?
Oh, yeah. No, so Governor Pritzker was asked, you know, asked this way, something like, you know, I can't remember exactly how it was asked, but basically, are you still going to pursue the progressive tax? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, we need it now more than ever. And that is a phenomenal thing to say at this point. You know, you're seeing around the world and across the country tax rates being cut, all kinds of ways to help the little guy, the company, survive this problem. And here you got Governor Pritzker again going the opposite of everybody in the country and saying, yeah, we need a progressive tax. It's I don't know what to call it, tone deaf, because tone deaf is not the right term, but he doesn't seem to get the economics of it. And I should add, by the way, that he's calling for the progressive tax, but as we've seen the collapse of our economy, he and Preckwinkle, President Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot, none of them have offered up any kind of furloughs or layoffs or wage reductions in order to lower the cost of government, in order to lower the pain on the residents who have to pay for that. So he's way off base.
And to not to interrupt, but have they offered a furlough of taxes?
You know, they've done things to try to push off. But let's call it this way: they haven't done enough of that. So no.
I mean, if I own a building, which I do not, and but if I did and I had rent people in there paying rent, do I still have to pay my property taxes if they're not paying their rent?
Yeah, I mean, we're still paying, you know, most of the taxes we have to pay. There's been a few things they've done, nothing major. You know, I've not seen anything that suggests I'm going to have to pay lower property tax, even though, you know, my library is shut, my schools, yes, they're running online, but it's not the same. There's been no relief offered across the state for people, for their school property taxes, for their library property taxes, all that, none of it. And yet they want the shutdown to continue, which means that people will continue to be out of work or reduced wages or whatever it is.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that the bankruptcy idea for the state and McConnell's, for the state, and yours and mine arguments for the city of years now, is the only, given the political will and lack of it, the only way to save taxpayers from an uncertain fate?
Well, you know, what are we left with? And you know, we have a lot of people who, you know, read our Wire Points commentary, and some of them say we left years ago. And, you know, they say we saw this writing on the wall, they're never going to do anything. So they left. And, you know, there's many of us here who stay to fight because we love this state. We have a history here. We have a property here. We have our family here, whatever it is. We continue to love the state. We may hate the politics and hate the corruption, but we want to see that changed. But, you know, at some point it gets to the point where if they're not going to do it, well, then let federal bankruptcy allow it.
Would the Democrats be hurt, like, say, Cuomo, who hates the idea in New York, and Pritzker, who's jealous of Cuomo's daily briefings in Illinois, doesn't like it, and said no? But would their constituents, meaning their public unions, be the ones, the public workers unions that basically elect us and that Franklin Delano Roosevelt warned us about, they would be the ones to take a hit too, right? So they don't like it.
Well, you know, if there is a bankruptcy, there's going to be hits for everybody. it would just be done in a proper way rather than a chaos way. I mean, imagine that, you know, we continue this thing for 10 years. It'll be chaos just because we'll never know the finances. The poor people will take a hit. The police and fire pension funds will become even worse funded, and nobody will know whether they're going to get a pension. If you do it under a bankruptcy, then at least you have an organized way of that. And of course, there's some people who are going to hate bankruptcy because they're going to see maybe some of their cost of living adjustments cut, some of their pensions cut. The bondholders will hate it. They'll get cuts. But
why would the bondholders hate it? Because I'm told by many cynics that, and not cynics, but realists, that all this stuff, all this wrangling is all about protecting the bondholders.
Well, they wouldn't like it because the reason why places like Illinois still don't have a junk rating is because people expect bondholders to get paid first. Bondholders expect themselves to be paid first. But under bankruptcy, all those, you know, a lot of things kind of fall apart. And certainly under these unprecedented moments, you know, the question is going to be who would take the hit. And, you know, some of that depends on the judges, but, you know, the judges will look and say, well, all right, bondholders, you're owed this much. This is your priority that you have in the law. And they'll look at the pension funds and they'll kind of try to figure out what's the fairest arrangement. But you can't expect bondholders get hit pretty hard in a lot of these bankruptcies. It certainly happened in Detroit and in GM. You know, pensioners have tended to be more protected. But because Chicago and Illinois have so much pension debt, you can't fix it without cutting some of that pension debt.
And then what about the most of the people of Illinois who are not in a public sector worker union, but they are subsidizing, and even in the time of an economic downturn and the shutdown of coronavirus, are expected to subsidize 3%, not for the cops, but for the teachers, 3% cost of living increases compounded per year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is one of the first things that has to go. We have, forget inflation right now, right? No inflation and these guaranteed 3% raises that state workers get and teachers get, you know, that should be one of the casualties of this crisis. There's no need to pay them right now. There's going to be deflation, as we know, across many things. And so that's where the ordinary resident has to get the relief. What, you know, we can't continue to force ordinary residents to pay guaranteed contracts, guaranteed pay, guaranteed COLAs, guaranteed pensions. It's unfair any way you look at it. No matter what you think about the system, you can't force people to do that. Or we'll see maybe even mass exodus after this because, you know, they'll say, why should I continue to pay it? I can't afford it. Forget I shouldn't pay it. I can't afford it. I'm leaving.
We talked at the beginning of this interview, and now as we close, on the fact that you thought that this could be the moment of clarity and, I guess, epic heroism for Lightfoot and Pritzker, and I guess Preckwinkle, although she's totally captive to the public workers unions, as is Pritzker, and kind of Lori Lightfoot as well. How do you see them playing this out? Do you think they can take advantage of this opportunity, or will they remain craven to their political futures?
Well, you know, I would be naive to think that the three of them would change their colors really quickly. But, you know, my experience, and I had, you know, international experience financially working in other countries, and I've seen it happen. I've seen people change, not because they actually changed, but because the situation forced them to change. And in some cases, they actually embraced the change, which is, so here's a situation in Illinois. You know, you've had decades. Let's take Pritzker to keep it simple. You've had Pritzker. He's a non-political guy. He was not in the legislature. He didn't vote for any of all the bad things that happened over the last three decades. You know, he's the newbie, and now that he's come in, and he's been handed a horrible situation by the preceding, whatever you want to say, 10 governors. Not his fault. And you know, he came in supporting the unions. He came in and them supporting him. He talks about helping the little guy, wanting to help the little guy. Well, now he's in a crisis that he didn't create, and all the rules are being broken, right? All the rules about the economy are being broken. And now he might say, wait a minute, the rating agencies are warning him that I'm going to be junk. Wait a minute, McConnell says, you know, I may need to use bankruptcy. Nobody's going to let Illinois borrow their way out of this crisis. Nobody wants, or nobody thinks it's smart to tax your way out of this or try to tax your way out of this. He's really run out of options. And everybody's watching Illinois now to make sure they don't do can kicks, they don't cheat, they don't lie. We're all watching. And so Pritzker could have this moment to say, guys, I didn't create this. It's not my fault. It's everybody else's, you know, all the bad decisions of the past. I'm going to be the guy that fixes Illinois. I'm going to be the guy that actually grabs this problem and says, I'm going to look at the solution sets that are out there. None of them were popular before. But if we can't borrow, if we can't reamortize pension debt, if nobody's going to give us a bailout, I don't want to go bankrupt. Well, then I'm going to do the big reforms. I'm going to do the transformational reforms that none of my predecessors wanted to do. And here I go. And I'm going to do, you know, I want to run for president. So I'm going to show people that I can reform Illinois like nobody else did.
Here, like what? What do you expect him to do if he's not going to go for bankruptcy?
Well, so then he'd have to do the big reforms, right? So this, and that's why I say I'm not naive. I don't think he'll do this, but right. This is what he would do. He would say, I want a pension amendment. Forget the amendment to taxes. Right. I want a pension amendment. And then we're going to pass the biggest pension reform of any state ever done in the country. Okay. Then number two, I'm going to look at these collective bargaining laws that don't allow local governments to lower their costs. And I'm going to change these collective bargaining agreements to something that favors the little guy, the ordinary taxpayer. And then I'm going to look at all these units of government. I'm going to collapse these things because we're too fat. We have too many units of government and we're just too expensive and it's too much bloat. And that's the kind of things he would do because that's what it would take. And,
right.
You know, he's got, in theory, he's the outsider. He could do it, but that's a dream. That's a big dream. You come back to bankruptcy.
Right. He is a multi-billionaire with his money and offshore accounts, apparently, according to the Tribune, and I have called him Governor Commodius Maximus for his toilets issues. And for all that, he doesn't need politics, right? He doesn't need politics to live. He doesn't need politics for power or money. In some sort of dream state that I'd be in, I would say he might be the perfect person to do what needs to be done, but. Then again, Ted Dabrowski of Wire Points, does he have the will and do the rest of us have the will? It's unknown now.
That is true. That is true. But you say he is the potential person only because he doesn't have the baggage of the past. He's got a year's worth of baggage, but he can shed that. And again, if he has no choice, maybe he'll do it. Or he gets to be the guy who runs Illinois all the way down into the ground.
Ted Dabrowski of wirepoints.org. Go to that website, read it. Sometimes they even link my column. Interesting. I thank you very much for being here on the Chicago Way, Ted.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to the new variety. Sit and relax. I'm that song and dance phenomenon, Max. Let me sing for you, do my thing for you till they give me the axe. Here's the song I'm doing, gonna fill you in on tax. Taxes, that familiar melody, simple and true. Hum it if you've earned a dollar or two. Bucks are being spent by the government for whatever they do. Anyone who earns a living gives more than a few. So our schools can be their best. So our roads will have no cracks. Someone fix those train tracks. I hear you calling, Uncle, and I'm paying my tax.
I think Paul Rico was right. If you really want to hate somebody and you want them to die a slow death, wish that they were gamblers. Politicians are gamblers. Illinois politicians are gamblers. But they don't gamble with their own money, do they? They just use your money and keep pushing it forward and demanding more. And in the meantime, they keep power and get rich as you get taxed out of your homes. For Ted Dabrowski of wirepoints.org, and for Jeff Carlin, WGN, executive producer of The Rokon Show, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune. This has been the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.